Spring of 43. I'd like to know what you remember about spring training.
Well, it was close to home. I married a girl from Newark, New Jersey.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. And it was, I thought it was good because every time I went to spring training before, and it was either Phoenix, Arizona, or Miami, something like that, my wife didn't go. But training down in Lakewood, why, it was only, an hour and a half. So it was good. So a lot of times they'd come down on a Saturday, take a ride, or come down on a Sunday, take a ride, you know. Mm-hmm. Watch us work out, and then when we were done, like, 1:30 in the afternoon or so, you spent some time with them. Mm-hmm. And I think, especially that year, I think that's when I had my best year with the Giants. So maybe that was the answer. I was just getting married, you know. So I got married in October in 41, so I was more or less still on a honeymoon. So.
I see. I understand that you were living and working out in the mansion and in the state. Is that true?
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it. I mean, what do you remember about the layout?
I forgot the name of the mansion, but it was like you're really going into a prison, more or less, you know, because everything was enclosed with trees and this beautiful home and everything. It seemed like that once you went in there, you weren't going to get out. I make a retreat down around Philadelphia, Malvern. Mm-hmm. You've probably heard of it. There's a town named Malvern. And we make a retreat down there every year, and this is the same idea down here. Once you enter, you figure, well, I'm not getting out till Sunday night. And this is when we trained in Lakewood. It was the same thing. You know, once you got in there, you figure, hey, am I going to get out? You know. But I thought it was wonderful. I thought it was really good.
Did you train on the grounds of the estate, or was there a ball field on the grounds?
They made a ball field on the grounds of the estate.
Was the man who owned the estate a Giant fan?
No. I don't believe. I don't know that. Could have been. If you mention a name... One of the real millionaires in the country.
I see.
Like a Rockefeller estate or something.
It wasn't Mr. Schmertz, was it? I know he's big in Lakewood now. No. The fellow just bought the Boston Celtics.
No.
I understand that Horace Stoneham selected the site because someone had told him that the pine trees surrounding the estate would keep out the cold winter winds and make it easier. Do you know anything about that?
I didn't know about that. No. Could have, though, because we had wonderful weather down there. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, a lot of Jewish people go down there in the wintertime, mm-hmm. and, you know, just relax and sit out in the sun, bundle up, and just sit out there to absorb the sunshine, and they claim that's healthy, so I guess it helped us.
Fine. So you're saying that in the spring of 43, the weather was good.
It was good.
It wasn't overly cold, or mm-hmm. any snowy days?
I don't believe, no.
Mm-hmm. See. Do you have any interesting stories about wartime travel restrictions or food and gas rations? How was train travel for the Giants in 42 and 43?
Well, we traveled and trained then, but...
Did you have trouble getting pulled in cars at any time?
No, we never did.
What about getting to and from games at the polo grounds when you were home? Did you have car pools because of the lack of gas?
No, I was the only one that lived in Jersey, so I was riding those troop trains all the time. See? Mm-hmm. So I would, as soon as the ball game was over, you'd take the subway all the way down to... I think Fulton Street or something, then I would catch the train riding into Newark. So then there
oh,
you would
so you were living in Newark?
I was living in Newark because I married a girl in Newark. So,
so you just rode public transportation? Then.
Public transportation all the way. As a matter of fact, I didn't even own a car.
Okay, fine. Anything else as far as wartime restrictions that stands out in your mind? Were the ballplayers given... extra stamps? I mean, could you go to your local butcher
well, no,
and
I'd,
a giant
I'd,
fan? And,
I didn't run into any of that. Like I said, I didn't own a car, so I had no problems as far as gas. And living in Newark, in a down next section of Newark, they call it, where all the Polish butchers thought, you know, Polish ball player, well, this was great. So we had no problems with food, I guess. So. But
and what's the name of the section? Nick's?
Down Neck.
Oh, Down Neck. I see. Is that one?
Ironbound section of Newark. See, that's where the... Newark Bears ballpark was. Mm-hmm. And when I was playing with the Newark Bears, my wife's father, I always said, you know, sat in right field, and I played second base, so it got to a point. He said, well, if you don't marry my daughter, I'm going to shoot you, so I had to marry her.
But actually,
being Polish, and down next section was strictly Polish.
I see.
And I was having a pretty good year, so everybody wanted to invite you over for home-cooked meals and
great.
Your kielbasa and all that stuff, and this is how I got to meet my wife. So.
Great. Now, I know that your major league record during the war, your stops after 43. Did you go into service?
I went into service for 26 months.
Well, what branch?
Coast Guard.
Fine. Do you remember the circumstances under which you went in? Was it after the 43 season ended?
Well, I was drafted really during the middle of the season, like in June or July. Mm-hmm. And being my father was dead and I was supporting three brothers and another sister, and my mother was a widow, I talked them into at least letting me finish the season. Mm-hmm. And like I said, plus I was having a great year, so they let me finish the season. So as soon as the season was over, as a matter of fact, in November, I was drafted.
Hmm. Did the Coast Guard have boot training like the Army?
Yeah,
and the Navy?
Manhattan Beach.
Is that where you went?
Oh, man, they were tough.
And that's right in New York?
Right in New York.
Manhattan Beach in New York.
Sheepshead Bay in New York. I think Jack Dempsey was in charge of the program there as far as physical fitness and everything. Mm-hmm. So,
what happened after that? Did you play ball for the Coast Guard, or did you go to Qatar?
From there, we were assigned different places. Matter of fact, my brother and I were drafted the same day, and they both picked us for the Coast Guard. I don't know why.
Okay.
But after boot training, he went to New London, Connecticut, and I went down to Curtis Bay, Maryland. Mm-hmm. And there they built ships like Coast Guard cutters. So they had designated a ship down there, I guess, for us. But in the meantime, they had gotten all these ball players together, and we had a ball club down there.
No kidding. Oh,
Gordon was on our team.
Yeah, I read an article by Frank Graham Jr. in Sports Illustrated years ago. In fact, that excited my interest in the Warriors. It said that Gordon used to hit home runs over barracks.
Over the barracks. The barracks
really?
Was in left field, yeah.
Well, tell me about it. What was it like?
Being a ball player, you know, helped a little bit. We had, I was in charge of the gate, in other words, you know, checking everybody coming in, because it was really a shipyard, mm-hmm. and we had to check people coming in and out, being able to work in on a ship. Mm-hmm. So I had charge of that, and we had Hank Sauer was there. Yeah. We had Hank Sauer, we had Sid Gordon, we had Lou Klein, who was with the Cardinals, we had Henry Majeski from Staten Island, he was in a big league, and we had all more or less AAA and big league ballplayers on the team. And from coming up from spring training, all these big league ball clubs, you know, would stop it. And, man, we tamped everybody that come by. As a matter of fact, I think we played the Boston Red Sox. They come in, and I think Lou Boudreau or somebody mentioned something there that I think we scored 16 runs on them in the first three innings. You know,
so, no kidding. Yeah. Holy smokes.
But we had a powerhouse. So then in the meantime, when they had built this Coast Guard cutter poncha train, where they stuck all the ball players on the ship, but luckily,
what happened then? Did you go out?
We went on a what we call a shakedown cruise. We went down to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and when we came back, they were loading the ship up with ammunition, like to go down to southern part of Asia, Southeast Asia. So we had a 10-day leave, and I think about the second day I was home, Japan surrendered.
No kidding. So you didn't get the steam to Southeast Asia.
No, we didn't. But we saw Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
Yeah.
And our skipper was the fellow, Del Webb's brother.
No kidding.
Yeah, the fellow
the
Yankees.
Yeah. Yeah.
He graduated from Groton, New London, Connecticut, up there, and became captain. So he was the skipper on the ship.
No kidding. Jeez.
So while in Guantanamo, there we were challenging all the ships all around. You know, everybody that was there. So we played every one of them. We beat them all. Well, we had a terrific ball club.
Who pitched for your team?
Had a fellow named by Don Kerr. Pitched for Baltimore.
Yeah.
Then remember Floyd Giebel?
Yes.
He pitched.
Bob Feller in 1940.
With the
right.
Detroit Tigers. He was with us. And we had, like I said, we had a couple other, like, AAA pitchers and all that. So it was good.
Gee, that's fine. Yeah. So Japan surrendered the second day.
Second day we were home on leave, because they were loading the ship with the ammunition we were going to take off. But the second day we were home, they surrendered. So then they unloaded the ship again. I understand now it's up in Iceland someplace as one of these icebreaker things and all that.
So it's still a commission.
Yeah. But we had twin 5-inchers on the ship. You know,
yeah.
And I forgot now what the term is, but we were the one. You had one boy, the other boy and myself. I would bring it up and he would put it up.
Trainer and spotter.
Well, the kid that was there, he was the shortstop and I was the second baseman on the team.
That's fine.
So we went down to.
I hope you got along.
Oh, yeah. We went down to Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
And we get on these things. And every time they pull one of these sleeves over, zoom, down it went. You know, it was just teamwork, precision, like, you know, from playing baseball, just the knack of doing this and that. Seemed like we always just got right on that sleeve and pressed the button, down it went.
So what is a sleeve? Is that a fake target?
It's a fake target that is pulled by an airplane.
Oh,
an airplane pulls this thing, and then they may have, how would you say, well, probably 1,000 yards of line, and then in back of that is this sleeve that as you pull it, it just fills out, and maybe it's about this round, you know. And every time we come by, we just knocked her down.
Wonderful.
So, yeah.
Great. What happened now when you came back in 46? Did things change? Had you found that your skills had deteriorated? Or?
No, I didn't. As a matter of fact, I come out of the service, I believe, in the best shape I was ever in, you know. And went out, went to spring training with the Giants down in Miami, and Mel Ott was the manager. Well, Mel really helped me out, you know, when he became manager.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Terry and I guess he didn't like the way I was doing things. But Mel Ott says, well, you do whatever you want to. And it seemed like things worked out because in 42, when Mel became manager, he said, you're the second baseman. He says,
good.
He said,
you
pivot.
Put in a
my problem,
of years there, if I recall.
Yeah, my problem was I like to pivot at second base. Certain way. Bill Terry didn't like the way I pivoted. But we always got results, so I thought it was the right thing to do. But
mm-hmm.
When Mel Ott became manager, he said, you do as you please. So it seemed like it worked out good because the Giants wound up in third place, and I led the league in fielding. I led the league in fielding for second baseman. I had the fewest amount of errors and the most total chances. So it worked out good. And so in 46, when I come back from the service, Mel Ott said, well, the job is yours, so go out. So I come back in good shape, and I think about the first 3 weeks or so, I was hitting 380, you know, and doing good. And the Giants were doing pretty well. And one Sunday, we were playing Brooklyn in a polo ground, and a guy hit a pop fly in back of first base, and I kept chasing it. Thought I was going to catch it, and first thing I know, I ran into the wall, and I broke my arm.
No kidding.
Yeah, broke my arm.
This is the spring training?
No, this is season.
The season.
I was hitting 380 in the season, 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
And I broke my arm, so I was out for quite a while. And in the meantime, they had put Buddy Blattner in. And then when I come back, well, then they start shifting around and different things. So I wound up playing second base, shortstop, third base.
Mm-hmm.
So then when the season was over, you know, we didn't do too well at that. So the following year, went to spring training out in Phoenix, Arizona. And Mel said, well, you're the second baseman. He said, start off in spring training, I want you to be the second baseman. So we were out there and worked out good. And the first exhibition game we had, we were playing Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And Gene Bearden was pitching, so he hit a ball in the left field. And left fielder threw the ball in, it was off the side.
Mm-hmm.
So Bearden is going for two bases. So I dove after him and tried to tag him. He slid into my wrist and broke my wrist. So I was out again. So then when I come back from that, then I was just moving all around different positions. But
Just had bad luck, really.
Had bad luck ever since. When I got out of the service, I had bad luck, although I was in, you know, real good shape, and I had good starts and everything. So then in 48, I went to spring training. So they sent me out to Jersey City first, and then from there to Louisville. And from Louisville, I went out to Kansas City and had a good year there. So in the meantime, the Yankees bought me. I belonged to the Yankees anyway once I got to Kansas City. So I hit 313 out there, so the Yankees were fighting for the pennant, but they got beat up. So the following year I went spring training with the Yankees, and I was supposed to be the utility man because I played second, short, and third, and they had Sternwise, and they had Rizzuto and Billy Johnson, so they figured, you know, I could back up either one of the three in, you know, in case of emergency. But then this kid come around, Jerry Coleman, and they start, you know, messing around with him, and I'll be dug on. They couldn't get him out. So he knocked Sternwise out of the job. So then they made Sternwise the utility man, and they sent me on. So.
I see.
Another bad break.
Gee whiz. I'd like to discuss some of the players in that Giant Club, just ask you about your recollections of them. What did you think of Ott as a manager?
Terrific.
Really?
Mel, as a manager, I would say Mel wasn't, you know, like the smartest man in the world, but actually Mel knew how to get along with the players.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I ever thought of, that if Mel would have, like Lou Boudreau did when he became manager, Mel was playing, Lou Boudreau, what did Lou do? He got Steve O'Neill, a manager himself, as a coach. He had got Bill McKechnie as a coach,
right?
He got Mel Harder as a coach. He got Oscar Melillo as a coach.
Yeah, right? You had a good coaching staff.
All a good coaching staff. And what they, Lou just went out and he played. He had a terrific year. Plus, you know, they won the pennant. And if Mel would have done that, if Mel would have got himself a good catching coach, not friends, like which wound up with Mel, you know, he hired Hank Gowdy, and then he had Pancho Snyder, you know, all old-time giants knew what he was there. But actually, these fellas, all they were yes men, you know. Mm-hmm. And Mel would say, well, gee, I think we ought to do this. And they'd say, yes, Mel, yes, Mel. Whether it was right or wrong, you know. Mm-hmm. But if he would have gotten, like, a good pitching coach, if he would have got a good catching, like Casey Stengel.
Was Dolph Lukey the pitching coach at that time?
He was there. Adolph Lukey was there when Bill Terry was there, when I was there. See, the first year I went up, Terry was manager. 40 and 41, okay, Terry was
there. Lukey came back. So I was talking with a Slim Emmerich who pitched for the 45 Giants, and he said Lukey was the pitching coach then. So
maybe later on, yeah.
Yeah.
But but if he would have gotten like a good infield coach and well outfield himself, he knew what to do. Casey Stengel did that. He kept Bill Dickey as a catcher, mm-hmm. Crosetti's an infielder, himself as the outfielder. Then he had the pitching coach, old Cincinnati guy,
Jim Turner.
So right. You had every phase of every, you know, different department.
I see.
And I thought if Mel would have done that, why, you know, he probably would have been a lot better. But
I understand that back in those days there wasn't as much attention to coaching. In other words, it was, say, hard for a pitcher to get a lot of advice. What kind of a fellow was Stone?
Very good.
Nice fellow.
He was good. Eddie Brannick. Everybody in the Giant organization was really good. They were all good.
Good. Had Van Mungo come over before you left? Do you have any interesting stories about Mungo?
Oh, gee.
We had one. He was quite a character. I mean, a rough, tough guy who
Van was a good fellow, but the only thing I remember about Van, we were playing in Cincinnati, like a Friday night game, and mm-hmm. Mungo pitched, and he lost a tough heartbreak, about 1-0 or something like that. We didn't get any runs for him. So that night, he went out, and he got, you know, tied one on.
Yeah.
So next day we're playing an afternoon game in Cincinnati, and it gets 102 degrees there, and it's really hot.
Yeah.
So he come to the ballpark, he was potted. So all the fellas said, go down a bullpen in right field before Mel out comes in, he sees you, you know, it might be trouble. Mm-hmm. So they took him down in a bullpen. So he laid on a thing, they like shaded him up and everything, like he fell asleep. In the meantime, when the ball game was over, they forgot to wake him up. And when he finally did wake up, he looked around, nobody in the park. He goes into the clubhouse. There's nobody in the clubhouse. Everybody's gone home. He ripped that clubhouse apart.
Did he really?
Oh, he threw chairs against the wall. It was a mess.
Yeah.
And then when we come up with the Sunday ball game, you know, then they found out what they happened. It was really something.
Who was your Keystone partner? Was it Buddy Kerr?
No, that was after the war. But when I first went up, Billy Jurgis. Billy Jurgis and then...
Jurgis.
Oh, yeah, great guy.
Really?
Great guy, yeah.
Did he still have a lot of his skills, or was he on the way down?
Well, he was on his way down, yeah. But Billy was, he'd teach you everything he knew, you know. He and Bartel, I roomed with Jurgis when I first went up. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I roomed with Bartel, mm-hmm. and he was a great guy. I mean,
yeah.
He said, just 10% you go first class, you know, and Dick was terrific. He's a hustler. On a ball field, he'd fight anybody. He'd even fight with me. But off the ball field, he was the greatest guy in the world, you know. So, mm-hmm. I corresponded with him for a long time. He was out in California. And last I heard, he got a job some sort of an executive for a milk company. Mm-hmm. So I wrote and told him, I said, send 2 quarts every week. Like, you know.
Right, you can use them.
Yeah.
Did he write back and say, send 2 6-packs? Is there anyone else that I haven't, well, I will mention others, but anyone else on the team that you'd like to comment on? Any other Giants to stand out in your mind? Or anything about 42 and 43?
Well, I thought, personally I thought, and which everybody else thinks too, I thought Mel Ott was great. Mm-hmm. Hubbell definitely is really a gentleman. Schumacher, Hal Schumacher, terrific, really good. Mm-hmm. They were the old school... And they played to win, mm-hmm. and you better be on your toes, because when they're pitching, you know, they expect the most out of you because they're giving the most for the ball club themselves. And
Did they have a settling influence in the club, do you think?
Oh, yes, I believe so. He did, I know as far as I was concerned, he did. You see, what we always did, before a ball game would start, I don't know if any of them tell you this, but before a ball game start, you know, you go over the opposing team's hitters and all that, and we always sat in the club room, and Mellott would come out and say, Schumacher, here, you're the pitcher. He sat in the middle and got the scorecard, and he said, I want you to do this, and I want you to do that. And everybody, as soon as the batter comes up, this is where I'm supposed to sit and stand because Schumacher said that, you know. Mm-hmm. And if the guy hits the ball the opposite way or he pitches him wrong, then it's his fault, and he'll take the blame.
Yeah.
But if you were in the wrong spot and he'd say, I told you to stay, then he really eats you out. But I thought it was good, especially, like I say, a young fellow coming up, and I thought that's the only way you learn. So. Mm-hmm. But I understand.
Was he right most of the time?
He was right most of the time. That's why he was great.
And Hubble did this too, I think.
Hubble did
the same thing.
Yeah. Matter of fact, the first game I played in the big leagues, I goofed Hubble up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I still have the paper, the first daily newspaper, the opening game. We're playing the Phillies.
Yeah.
And we got them beat, I think, 1-0 or something. And it's in the eighth inning, top of the eighth. We get one man out, and there's a man on first base. And Maury Arnovich hit me a ground ball for a double play. And I booted the thing. And Gus Sir was the next batter, and he hit a home run, and he got beat 3-1.
Okay.
So I kept the whole paper. I still have it at home. Every now and then I go through my scrapbook, and I'll pull that thing out, and I say, you dummy.
But those things happen.
Oh, sure, but not opening day. And like I said, right. A guy like Hubble.
It hurts to make an opening day boot.
Yeah.
I know that New York was affected by blackouts in 42. What about 43? I mean, did the blackouts continue?
No, not that I remember.
Okay, do you ever recall any unusual incidents because of blackouts? I mean, did the Giants schedule most of their games during the day?
The only thing I ever saw up there that really caused, well, they had a day up there, we were playing Pittsburgh, and it was something about bringing scrap in. If you brought some scrap, you could come into the ballpark for free.
Yeah.
And we were playing Pittsburgh, I think we had them beat about 9-2 or something. The place was jammed, you know, but mainly all kids. So when it got to the end of the eighth inning, the kids thought the game was over, and they all swarmed on the field. And they couldn't clear the field.
No kidding.
They had to forfeit the game to Pittsburgh.
No kidding.
Yeah. That's about the only thing that I remember in regards to something unusual.
Yeah, that's a great story. Mm-hmm. I understand that, now here again, you may have been in town. I'm not sure if you were on the team, but you may have been in town. That after the 1942 All-Star Game, which was at the Polo Grounds, a near panic ensued because they had an air raid drill right after the game. In other words, just as the game was over, they had an air raid drill and everyone went rushing out of the stands. Do you recall
anything about that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, I didn't bring my book along with the roster of clubs year by year, but I'm trying to think of other Giant players. Perhaps you can help me. What kind of a guy was Johnny Wittig, the pitcher?
We got into more trouble. As a matter of fact, every time my wife would call, just I want to talk to Wittig,
He'd
always get my phone calls, you know?
No kidding.
As a matter of fact, John will probably tell you a story. I don't know what year it was, but Cincinnati bought Wittig.
Yeah.
And Cincinnati was loaded with pitchers, and everybody trying to figure out what they could buy Johnny Wittig for. So in the meantime, John had told me the story. They went to spring training. And when he was to spring training, Bill McKechnie went up to him. He says, okay, get out to second base. Let's see you go. And John said, hey, you bought the wrong Wittig. So year round up, they found out I don't know how that ever happened, but that's what he told me. He said they thought that he used the second baseman.
Ask
John
story.
About that
all
when
right,
I see him.
All right,
him.
I will. I'll be seeing him on Saturday morning in Baltimore.
He told me the story about it. That's how I got to hear about it.
Gee, that's great.
Mm. I always have, you go around here, you give speeches to, kids, teenagers, or sports banquets and all that. So I always like to tell them, I said, that I'm the only guy that batted 1,000. You know, American League pitching is really easy. They never got me out. I batted 1,000 one for one.
Great.
So then I add, if I'd have batted twice and got 2 hits, I'd have batted 2,000 or something,
Sure.
They say I'm the only guy that batted 1,000, sat on a bench, stuff like that. But they were good. I was with them a month of the season. They won a pennant. They cut me in on a quarter share of the World.
Right?
49.
Yeah.
They cut me in on a quarter share of the World Series, so it was worth it. Yeah.
Fine. Mm-hmm. What about Big Cliff Melton? I hope to see him. He's in Baltimore, too.
Yeah, he's good. Cliff was good. They used to kid him about his ears all the time.
Oh, really? He had big ears? Cauliflower?
Big ears, and he always had a guitar, you know, and while we're traveling on trains, you know, he was always there yodeling and all that stuff. But every time Cliff would get knocked out of the box, he'd have a tough time. He'd say, well, no wonder. Look at the background they had to hit out of, you know, his big ear.
No kidding.
Yeah. That's why I said that's what was good about those old giant ball players. They were terrific. They were, and like a kid coming up, boy, everybody tried to help.
Yeah, I was going to ask everybody, you, Ron. Some veterans weren't given that hard time.
Everybody tried to help. Jesus, we had Joe Moore in left field and Hank Danning, the catcher. Jeepers, they gave me so many pep talks and all that, you know, because they knew I was young and, like I said, Whitehead was with them quite a, you know, long time. And,
yeah. So there was good spirit on the team.
It was good spirit, and Schumacher, I think he was like a father to me. And as a matter of fact, even now when he comes around, he visits in Wilkes-Barre, he always gives me a call. So.
Good. Where is Hal Schumacher now?
He's up at Adirondack Bat Company up there in someplace in
New York?
New England? Up in that area somewhere. Up part of, and then he was down one time, he was, I think it was the big wheel of the Little League tournament in Williamsport. You know, he was connected with that too. But actually, he was the owner of the Adirondack Bat Company.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. He's a great fellow.
What about Sid Gordon? Wasn't he
Sid was good,
third baseman and outfielder?
Yeah. Sid could throw. He had an arm. He could throw through a brick wall. Sid was good. He was a good hustler, good, nice fellow. Mm-hmm. And we were in a service together.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you're of Polish extraction. Of course, Gordon was of Jewish extraction. Now, being in an ethnic melting pot like New York, did you find that the fans would become polarized towards, say, one player or another? In other words, did the Giants consciously try to get people of different ethnic backgrounds in the club?
I don't know. I heard stories before that they always try to get a good Jewish ball player because everybody in New York and through that area there, you know, they roots with the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. And I think they did that one time. It was Andy Cohen or somebody, second baseman.
Yeah.
And they thought that he would, like, draw the Jewish people into the stands. But Sid Gordon, he was good. But outside of, like, hiring a Polak or something like that,
sure.
Wouldn't know,
of course.
It wouldn't be that. But,
right. But did you find that the Polish fans would gravitate to you? I mean, would you be... In other words, you said that you lived in a Polish neighborhood in Newark and were, you'd be invited out to meals and so on. Did that occur in New York, too? I mean, would...
I had a lot of friends
community in New York?
From the lower end between New York and Brooklyn. There was, as a matter of fact, they had a day for me.
No kidding.
They were going to have a day for me in the Polo Grounds. Mm-hmm. Then in the meantime, I was sent to Jersey City, so they had the day in Jersey City. And I had a lot of movies where they brought people from Poughkeepsie, New York, Brooklyn, Jersey, and all that.
Great.
And they all come into the Jersey City ballpark. They had these Polish dancers. They had dressed in Polish uniforms and everything.
Right.
And that night, there was a banquet in Brooklyn, lower end of Brooklyn Polish section, and we were all invited.
Great. Are there any other players on the 42 or 43 Giants I haven't covered that you'd like to comment on? As I said, I don't have my book with me, so
actually, we had Harry Danning and Gus Mancuso were the catchers.
Yeah.
And we had Babe Young at first base. Mm-hmm. And then we got Johnny Mize, and I played second. Then we had Jurgis and Bartel at shortstop. And then we had Billy Werber at third base. Mm-hmm. In the outfield, we had Joe Moore, and then we had Hank Lieber and Mel Ott. And then Johnny Rucker come up. Then pitching, we had Hubbell, Schumacher, Mel. Mm-hmm. Bill Orman was pitching for us. And big, tall right-hander. So that's, you know, mainly about who they were.
What do you remember about Rucker? I understand he was very fast.
Real fast. But John never... I think he never... John was fast when you ran straight ahead.
Yeah.
But when it comes to rounding and bases and everything like that, he never had the knack of touching the base the right way, you know, on the inside and cutting down a couple more steps and all that. But he was fast, but he was a punch hitter, you know. Didn't throw too well. But
Had Ernie Lombardi come over by 43? I've heard so many great stories about him. Do you have any that you want to add?
Oh, Lom was great. I think the greatest thrill he ever had, and I know it thrilled me, we were playing Brooklyn, and in Brooklyn, and every time that, you know, Lom comes up, instead of three outfielders, they got seven outfielders because all the infielders go back and cover everything up. Yeah. And Lom lays the bunt down third baseline.
Yeah.
And it got by the pitcher, and naturally nobody's there, and Lom beat it out. He got a standing ovation in Brooklyn that he had laid down a bunt and beat it out for a base
hit. It was in Brooklyn.
It was in Brooklyn, two of all places. But Lom was great. He'd get a ball and he'd rub it up like that. You know how usually...
One hand,
just that one hand. And every place he went, he had his catching mitt folded underneath his arm, and he'd just walk around. He said, "You got to take care of your tools." And that was right.
She was... That's something. Had Joe Medwick come over before
Joe come after that, yeah.
Yeah. I want to comment on the other... Oh, yeah, John Mize. Tell me about Mize.
Well, John,
how did he strike you?
John was a good hitter.
Yeah.
Period.
Right.
That's about it. And
I mean, was he an aloof person or a friend?
John was all right. Well, John, I always talked about John, you know, and everything.
Oh, did he really?
And, we always said, as soon as he got in the clubhouse, he was doing all the talk. Blah, blah, blah. And so the only reason he did that is because he couldn't talk at home. His wife was dominating at home. So when he come to the ballpark, well, he figured he was amongst guys, so he'd do all the talking and everything. But John was everything, you know. But John was a great hitter.
Yeah.
A good hitter. He didn't move too much around the first base, but he was a good hitter.
Well, let's